The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties, with its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina. Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Tough Call, Millions of Dollars Tied to the Future of UNC's Arena. And this article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Renovate or Move. After 40 years in the Smith Center, UNC weighs its next step for men's basketball. And this is written by Dane Huffman. UNC Chapel Hill's decision on the future of its basketball arena will impact millions of dollars and thousands of seats as the university chooses whether to renovate the Dean Smith Center or build an arena as the cost of collegiate athletics soars. UNC, in its first extensive detailing of the costs involved, revealed that renovating the Smith Center would cost $591 million. By comparison, a new arena at Carolina North would cost $786.5 million. UNC is also looking at building the arena at the former married student housing location called Odom Village, which is just west of the Smith Center. University leaders are now discussing the options with a variety of stakeholders, including alumni, former players, and students. We all have to be on the same page, athletics director Bubba Cunningham said. If we're going to do a $600 to $800 million project, the university community has to be behind it. And that's not easy. Former Tar Heel coach Roy Williams is opposed, and Williams has said the late Dean Smith urged him to fight moving the arena away from campus. Many former Tar Heel players, including Tyler Hansbrough, favored renovating the Smith Center. The economic impacts are significant for a town deeply tied to UNC athletics. Splashed along Franklin Street are multiple signs and placards urging the school to renovate the Smith Center. The Shrunken Head store, which focuses on Carolina apparel, is selling T-shirts urging the Heels to stay in the Smith Center. Those businesses in the heart of Chapel Hill, whether they sell T-shirts or tacos, see their registers sing when the Tar Heels play at home. Moving the arena to Carolina North, which is not walkable, to Franklin Street, could shift those dynamics, but Carolina North, with 230 acres to be developed, is likely to rise as an economic powerhouse of its own, a mix of students, workforce housing, and academic buildings that will be buttressed by retail, restaurants, and more. UNC's point person on Carolina North, Executive Director for Real Estate Development, Tiffany Lacey, said one comparable project that has come up in Carolina's conversations is Fenton and Cary. Fenton's offerings include restaurants, retail, apartments, and a future boutique hotel, but it obviously is not the home to a national basketball power. Still, the cost figures the university is now releasing are sobering. For example, renovating the Smith Center would be roughly double the cost of updating the Lenovo Center in Raleigh. But the differences in the arenas are stark. The Smith Center opened in 1986 and features one concourse narrowed by current standards, and essentially no premium seats. The Lenovo Center opened in 1999 with a wide array of luxury seats and is currently being revamped to improve the fan experience. Carolina is considering two options if it builds a new arena. Carolina North is the former Horace Williams Airport site that is about to see a major expansion. Putting an arena at Carolina North would cost $786.5 million, UNC estimates. It would also add considerable appeal to a project that UNC sees as essential to its future expansion. But it also comes at the price of moving the arena off campus for the first time. Another site is Odom Village. That option came after UNC officials scoured the campus looking for options, even toying with ideas such as putting the arena near Fraternity Court, bulldozing Woolen Gymnasium, and or replacing the parking deck near Keenan Stadium, but none of those options were feasible. The parking deck near the Smith Center at 4 acres also seemed too small, but Odom Village, which is currently being demolished, remains a possibility as it offers 14 acres and is connected to campus. Odom Village is on Mason Farm Road west of the Smith Center and behind the medical complex. The school projects that building an arena there would cost $703.2 million, although it doesn't have the development potential of Carolina North. If Carolina builds a new arena, it expects it to seat between 16,200 and 17,700 fans with more than 3,000 premium seats. Significantly, UNC is looking at roughly 3,000 seats for students, and its current thinking would have them in the lower bowl and behind the baskets. Finding future dollars. Driving all this is the scramble for revenue. While future projects are no guarantees, a new arena would have some long-term advantages. UNC projects that the Carolina North site would yield an annual net cash flow of $26 million, and Odom Village would produce $25.1 million annually. By comparison, renovating the Smith Center would yield $4.1 million annually, a number that would be impacted by revenue loss during the renovation. All this is happening at the same time planning for the Carolina North project is springing to life. UNC has requests for qualifications out for both the design phase and the placemaking phase for Carolina North, and UNC hopes to have those decisions approved by the Board of Trustees at their May 20 to 21st meetings. Having a decision on the arena by then seems unlikely. I think that would be pushing it, Cunningham said. He added, "We have to continue to be patient. The basketball program is key to where we are headed." Much of that involves having conversations with former players, alumni, and other supporters and students. The athletic department leaders are making a point of meeting with constituents to lay out the financials, especially given the pushback from many over the potential of leaving the Smith Center. "I love the high school gym I played in," Cunningham said. "That's the emotion of it." But he said there's also the reality of what he called logic and finance as sports hurdles into an era of rapidly rising costs. Steve Newmark, the executive associate athletics director who was hired in July 2025 and will eventually replace Cunningham, said the status quo doesn't work in current athletics. Newmark said the earliest UNC would play in the new arena would be the 2030 to 2031 season. If the university renovates the Smith Center, that might be done in time for the 2028 to 29 season, he said. Settling on seats. UNC projects that a new arena in particular would raise significant revenue, but the university would still need to raise large amounts to fund the project. Chancellor Lee Roberts previously told Triangle Business Journal that UNC would look to raise about half the costs and then finance the rest. That can be a heavy lift in an uncertain economy, but athletics officials sounded confident that their base of supporters would respond. Rick Steinbacher, a senior associate athletics director, said one of the firms UNC has hired for guidance is a national firm called Legends, and their feedback was positive. He pointed out that the sale of new premium seating would be a significant source of revenue. For example, he noted that when UNC launched the premium Blue Zone section at Keenan Stadium in 2011, roughly half the buyers had not previously been season ticket holders. But how those seats break down in a new arena could get contentious. When UNC was raising funds for the Smith Center in the 1980s, it gave lifetime rights to seats to significant donors. Those permanent seat designations remain as long as the Tar Heels play at the Smith Center. And of course, the donors make at least their required annual minimums. The Smith Center has 4,357 permanent seats out of its total seating of 21,750. The bulk of those permanent seats are in the most desirable spots, such as the center of the lower bowl. UNC also has another 2,096 seats that are endowed. Those guarantees would continue in a new arena. One of the negatives Carolina discovered about giving major donors the best seats and pushing back students was it changed the energy in the arena. Carolina's previous home, Carmichael Auditorium, had a raucous environment with thousands of students behind the Tar Heels bench. The students were dispersed when the Smith Center opened, leading former Florida State University guard Sam Cassell to mock the Carolina fans as a cheese and wine crowd. UNC has since made changes to address that, such as adding risers. Interestingly, UNC officials say Carolina allots various different amounts of tickets for students based on the appeal of the game. For example, Carolina allots 5,400 seats for students for the game against Duke University, although many are in the back sections of the upper deck. But on average, that number is roughly 2,800. UNC officials have looked at other schools to see how they handle students, and some, such as Michigan State University, have students much closer to the action. Of course, Duke puts students in prime spots along the sidelines, although the students only number about 1,200 for Blue Devil home games. Seeking advice. Steinbacher noted that UNC has spent $1.3 million in recent years on consultants to help guide the process. Four in particular have been involved in the arena. Tipping Point Sports, a sports advisory firm formed in 2011. Legends, which consulted with UNC on revenue numbers. Populous, which helped with design concepts. And Mortensen, an arena builder that did the cost estimates. All that helped UNC pencil out both costs and projected revenue. For example, one summary of options UNC is sharing with stakeholders lists mixed-use potential for each site. The potential is listed as none for the current site, moderate for Odom Village site, and high for the Carolina North site. Multiple other firms have been enlisted as well, including engineering firm Kimley Horn and Clancy and Thays Construction Company, both based in Raleigh, as UNC looks to mark a path forward in the new era of sports. Long process to now. The Smith Center was dated not long after it opened in 1986. In 1988, the Detroit Pistons of the National Basketball Association opened the Palace at Auburn Hills, a new arena ringed with luxury suites and premium amenities. The arenas that came after that followed that pattern, and UNC is essentially trying to catch up. In Raleigh, for example, the Lenovo Center is already unveiling more fan-friendly options, such as a new sports bar with a view of the games in the upper deck and new premium bunkers in the lower bowl. Significantly, the Lenovo Center and Carter Finley Stadium are the linchpins of a major development that Carolina Hurricanes owner Tom Dundon is undertaking in that area. UNC's Roberts has noted that the Smith Center offers no amenities nearby, such as restaurants and bars and places for fans to linger. Upgrading the Smith Center would be expensive. UNC would simply repair it, but that cost over time would be $153 million, and that path seems unlikely. A renovation would cost an estimated $591 million. UNC broke those costs down as $288 million for the arena upgrades, $46 million for a new practice facility, $27 million for an escalation estimate baseline, and $108 million in soft costs, which includes the designing, permitting, and technology required for the building, and $121 million for associate project costs. Carolina North option. Carolina North, by comparison, could be designed and built to provide that, and also has an advantage in that some of the infrastructure needed for an arena, roads, sewage systems, etc., could be built into the plan. UNC has already had two introductory Zoom calls for firms interested in bidding on Carolina North. One was the request for qualifications for the master planning portion of the project, which drew around 150 firms. Bids for that project, with a budget of $8 million, are due March 19. A separate Zoom event for the RFQ for the placemaking drew 70 firms, including some that were branding agencies and advertising agencies. That part has a budget of $200,000 and bids are due March 13th. "We were very excited by the number of firms," said Lacey. "I wasn't necessarily surprised by the number of firms we had because this is an amazing opportunity, but we were quietly happy with the turnout." Lacey said the plan is to narrow the field to three or four firms each and have a proposed selection for the Board of Trustees in May. She expects the placemaking work would begin in May and the design work would begin midsummer. In addition, UNC will hire a developer, which would likely begin work in the fall. Lacey said she expects master planning to last about a year, with vertical development probably no earlier than 2028. She said students might be at Carolina North in the fall of 2029 at the earliest, although that would depend on the university's needs as it expands. While we aren't going to rush into this, we have to be cognizant of meeting the university's long-term goals, Lacey said. One new option on campus. UNC leaders, led by Roberts, have noted the advantages of Carolina North. There, the school has plenty of land, easy access to I-40, and a chance to build the sort of mixed-use development that is the rage in sports now. But Carolina North is 1.6 miles from campus. In many ways, Carolina would be making a move similar to what NC State University did when it moved to the Lenovo Center, adding seats but losing the aura of Reynolds Coliseum. If Carolina prefers to remain on campus, the Odom Village option could rise in consideration. The energy of an on-campus arena was evident February 7. After Seth Trimble's winning shot against Duke University, Carolina students bolted out of the Smith Center and, like so many students in Chapel Hill before, raced from the arena to Franklin Street. That would change, of course, if UNC moves the arena Carolina North as excited students would leave the arena and board a bus. Leading the decision is Roberts, who was named the permanent chancellor in August 2024. He brings deep experience in financing and budgeting to the job and is keenly aware of how these decisions will shape the future financial health of the university. Tough calls are often the hallmarks of chancellors. In 1961, Chancellor Bill Aycock faced just such a decision after UNC was involved in a basketball point-shaving scandal and Coach Frank McGuire left for the National Basketball Association. Determined to have a clean program, Aycock summoned a young and untested Tar Heel assistant coach to South Building and hired Dean Smith. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by Dane Huffman. Spot in 5 points now up for grabs. Julie Flournoy is retiring and closing her four-year convenience store. A prominent location at 5 points in Raleigh is available again after a local woman with deep ties to the artist community is ready to retire. Julie Flournoy is closing her shop, four-year convenience, that's located on the lower level of the two-story building at 1700 Glenwood Avenue. The shop is across from Hayes Barton Baptist Church. Her store, which features work by local painters and gifts and accessories, will close at the end of March. "My love is selling and supporting local artists, but I'm ready to get out of retail," she said. Flournoy plans to travel with her husband, a pilot for Delta Airlines. She would have up to 500 paintings in her shop at one time, as well as pillows, gifts, and other accessories, but she said rising costs combined with a rent that exceeded $4,000 led her to decide to retire. Flournoy started her business in 2012 in the building on Fairview Road that once held a Grocery Boy Jr. and moved to the well-known Five Points location in 2016. The quirky building in the middle of a parking lot dates to 1965 and was first home to a dry cleaning business. In 1979, it became the home to Audio Buys, although the stark gray vibe of the building was out of sync with the nearby Hayes Barton neighborhood. Audio Buys vacated the building in 2007 and it sat empty for years. In 2015, Rick and Carol Marcotte, owners of the Form and Function Interior Design, bought it for $1.35 million. The building underwent extensive renovations, including adding a rooftop terrace that is now branded as Deck 5 and available as an event venue. It sold for $3.1 million in January 2021 to B LLC, with John Paul Schick listed as the registered agent. Avison Young is listing the property for lease. A posting lists 2,604 square feet as available on the first floor and 4,050 as available on the second floor, which is now offices. The building has an assessed value of $2.7 million, according to Wake County Records. Restaurant closes in downtown Raleigh. A deli that opened with high hopes in a trendy area of downtown Raleigh will close at the end of March. The Matt Fern-owned Ish Delicatessen announced on Instagram that its last day will be March 29. The restaurant in the former Pharmacy Cafe location at the Person Street Pharmacy at 702 North Person Street on the edge of historic Oakwood opened in the summer of 2021. "There aren't words for how much respect I have for the crew that has clocked into this weird place for the past five-ish years," the Instagram post read. "This can only go so far, and unfortunately, we've reached that limit." Rare Cary Farm homes may move. Cary isn't overrun with homes more than a century old, but a pair of former farmhouses would be moved if a new rezoning is approved. David Farrell and Bill Souter filed a rezoning application with the town to rezone 66 acres in Northwest Cary. The proposed rezoning is Planned Development District Major. Part of the current site is in the Carpenter Historic District and includes the Mally and Cora Butts Farm and the Bill Sears Farm. The houses and farm buildings date to the late 19th century. Soap Shop adds to new offerings at Quail Corners. Quail Corners Shopping Center is continuing its streak of newcomers later this month. Ryan and Claire Young are opening Magnolia Soap and Bath Company, a plant-based soap company with 52 locations. Magnolia's 1,364 square foot space will be in Quail Corners Phase 2. The couple signed their agreement with Magnolia in August 2024 and signed with Quail Corners last spring. It took forever just to find a retail space that would fit what we were looking for as far as foot traffic and the demographic we needed, Claire Young said. Quail Corners has landed a handful of new franchises recently, including Pottery Painting Studio, Color Me Mine, and restaurant Hangry Joe's Hot Chicken and Wings. Clyde Cooper's Barbecue even relocated from downtown. And finally, empty space near NC State to finally get an update. A longtime eyesore on Raleigh's Hillsborough Street is finally being addressed. Raleigh real estate firm CityPlat plans to start construction at 2510 Hillsborough Street in April. The building is in a prime location next to Target across from the NC State University campus. CityPlat principal Nikita Zitoff said the firm has a lease in place with an undisclosed national retailer that will take 80% of the space. The budget for construction is $3 million, according to permits filed with the city. CityPlat plans to deliver a little more than a white box, Zitoff said, including facade work and an elevator. The firm's portion of the work will take 4 to 6 months, while the tenant's portion will take about the same amount of time. It's going to look beautiful, Zitoff said, while acknowledging the project has taken almost 4 years to start. And now we turn to the major news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one, written by Kaylee Thompson. Longtime family business charts expansion. Wilkinson Supply of Raleigh adds warehouse space in Durham. A 60-year-old plumbing distribution company based in Raleigh is expanding with a new warehouse in Durham that is 5 times larger than its current Bull City facility. Wilkinson Supply Company, a family-owned business, has started construction on a 60,000-square-foot warehouse in northwest Durham near Duke University. The building will include an 8,000-square-foot kitchen and bath showroom. Audrey Loader, CEO of Wilkinson, said the company is bursting at the seams in its current warehouse on Edmund Street, which is 10,000 square feet. Loader said the new building at 2318 Operations Drive will be complete in April 2027. The company will move all of its staff and operations from the 2724 Edmund Street location to the new one shortly after. The new warehouse will increase Wilkinson's inventory capacity. With a small warehouse, you don't have the space to inventory a lot of stuff. In Raleigh, we have a distribution center that's about 90,000 square feet, and so most of our inventory lives in Raleigh. But Durham is such a busy branch for us that they need material for the plumbing contractors every day, Loader said. So we're basically having to run material from Raleigh to Durham daily to keep up with the customer demand. Now we'll be able to have inventory on hand, so less transferring of inventory material, she said. Loader said the company will keep the Edmund Street warehouse. She mentioned that her dad has dreams of turning it into a pickleball bar, but they've also discussed renting it out. Wilkinson Supply Company was founded in Raleigh in 1965 by Loader's grandparents. It has 5 locations, Raleigh, Durham, Carrboro, Wilson, and Fayetteville. Fayetteville is the only one without a showroom presently. Loader said she knew the company needed a bigger facility 5 years ago. She landed on the 6.21-acre site south of Interstate 85 in Durham in 2023. At the time, Truist owned the property as overflow parking for its adjacent data center. Longtime jewelry maker files for reorganization. Charles & Colvard, a public company founded in 1995, has amassed millions in debt. This article is written by Kate Tracy. A jewelry maker based in Morrisville has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy after years of financial challenges. Charles & Colvard, a public company founded in 1995 and known for its production of the gem moissanite and lab-grown diamonds, filed for bankruptcy reorganization on March 2nd in the Eastern District of North Carolina. As of February 19, the company, with its headquarters next to Lake Crabtree, had $19.2 million in total assets and $10.5 million in total debts, according to the filing. Its largest creditors are China-based jewelry company Valor Gems, the law firm K&L Gates, Google, and Atlanta-based SBP Office Owner LP. Charles & Colvard has a unique brand and product line supported by superb employees and suppliers, board chair Michael Levin said in a release. After thoroughly evaluating our alternatives and considering recent events and the market pressures facing our industry, the company's board of directors decided that a court-supervised process is the best path forward to make the changes needed to ensure Charles & Colvard's long-term success. Charles & Colvard had been struggling for years, reporting millions in losses in 2023 and 2024 as it burned through cash. For the first 9 months of its fiscal 2025, the company reported a net loss of $6.6 million on sales of $11.9 million, according to SEC filings. The company's net sales were $21.96 million in 2024, down from $29.95 million in 2023, according to an SEC filing. Its stock was delisted from the NASDAQ in April 2025 after receiving multiple non-compliance warnings. Its share price closed at 11 cents March 3rd on the OTC markets. The company was first listed on the NASDAQ in 1997. In January, the board of directors terminated President and CEO Don O'Connell and appointed Levin as executive chair to oversee the affairs of the company, lead the executive team, and conduct a search for a chief executive officer for an initial term of 3 months. As this process unfolds, the company remains fully committed to serving its customers, supporting its partners, and preserving the value of its brand, said Levin. In March 2025, the company had 24 full-time employees and one part-time employee, according to SEC filings. The company said it had under 100 full-time employees in 2023. And our next story is written by Lauren Onasorge. Merck cuts jobs as vaccine demand ebbs. One of the region's largest drug manufacturers is laying off more than 150 workers in Durham amid a global slowdown in demand for vaccines. Merck, which produces products such as HPV vaccine Gardasil and immunotherapy drug Keytruda, is cutting 147 positions at its old Oxford Road site in Durham. An additional 7 employees are being cut from its nearby Rodolph Street facility. The layoffs result from Merck's decision to cease production of Gardasil in Durham because of the recent worldwide reduction in demand for the product, according to Amanda Taylor, Vice President of Plant Management Vaccine Operations, in a notice filed with the North Carolina Department of Commerce. Gardasil is designed to prevent certain types of cancer, according to a 2024 report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Infections that cause most HPV cancers and genital warts have dropped 81% in young women since HPV vaccines were introduced. We continually assess our operations and evolving business needs and adjust as needed to ensure the effectiveness of our manufacturing network in delivering reliable, compliant supply of our medicines and vaccines, a company spokesperson said in an email. Lenovo may move its headquarters near Arena. The development around the Lenovo Center could add a major tenant, and this is written by Lauren Onasorge also. Raleigh's upcoming sports and entertainment district around the Lenovo Center could soon land a global company as a major tenant. Lenovo, the $69 billion Chinese electronics giant with a dual headquarters in Research Triangle Park, is exploring its space options as its current lease is set to expire next year. The Lenovo Center development is being considered for the new headquarters location, multiple sources confirmed to Triangle Business Journal. Lenovo, one of the region's largest employers with approximately 4,000 local workers, declined to comment on a potential move to Raleigh. Its lease in Morrisville expires in 2027, but does include renewal options. We are continuously evaluating our real estate portfolio and are assessing all options in the local market, including our current site, a Lenovo spokesperson said. The discussions come after Lenovo in 2024 inked a 10-year, $60 million naming rights deal to have its name replace PNC at the Raleigh Arena, that's home to the Carolina Hurricanes of the National Hockey League, and the men's basketball team for NC State University. The branding deal was a major signal that Lenovo wanted to grow its image both in the region and nationally. Phase one of the development around the arena calls for 150,000 square feet of office space. Construction is expected to ramp up this year with parking decks being built first. The project is led by Pacific Elm Properties of Dallas, the real estate venture of Kane's owner, Tom Dundon. Phase one also calls for 200,000 square feet of entertainment and lifestyle retail space, a 150-room hotel, and more than 500 apartments, plus a revamped tailgating scene and potentially a 4,300-seat music venue. A spokesperson for Pacific Elm declined to comment. Lenovo, which has a hybrid office policy, has approximately 660,000 square feet of office space off Development Drive in RTP. The three buildings on more than 60 acres are assessed at more than $110 million, according to Wake County property records. They are owned by Sentinel Real Estate Corporation of New York, which acquired them in 2018 for $135 million. Lenovo, led locally by Ryan McCurdy, has a long history in the Triangle. It entered the market in 2005 with the acquisition of IBM's PC division. It would double down on that bet in 2014 by acquiring IBM's low-end server business for $2.1 billion, propelling itself to becoming one of the state's largest employers. Lenovo first occupied the Development Drive campus in RTP in 2014 with the acquisition of the server business. The company previously had offices in Perimeter Park in Morrisville, but consolidated its entire local operation in Development Drive in 2019. And reporter Kaylee Thompson contributed to this story. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the reporter pages. First, we have Lauren Onosorge's page on technology and innovation. RTP 3.0 makes way for data centers. RTP looks for ways to provide power with smaller data center options. Could data centers be part of the next big project in Research Triangle Park? Not the huge, power-hungry mega campuses, but smaller next-generation data hubs are allowed under the new zoning for RTP 3.0. There are data centers dotting the park already, as individual tenants like Cisco and Dell have built them from the ground up for their own use. Scott Levitan, CEO of the Research Triangle Foundation, said it's unclear how many currently exist as they're tucked into individual campuses, but with 385 companies operating, they're nothing new for RTP. But they could get more prevalent, potentially supporting multiple tenants, and they could even serve as a draw for next-generation technology players looking for office space. As RTP builds out its 3.0 strategy and works to attract additional investment, more data centers will likely be essential to support advanced technologies. I would say we probably don't have the land or power to do mega ones, but I think data centers are critical infrastructure, Levitan said. The Research Triangle Foundation is not actively recruiting data center developers, Levitan said. Unsolicited interest is already here amid the AI boom that is fueling projects across the state. Levitan said he's aware of parties evaluating sites in the park for smaller size data centers that can take advantage of RTP's existing power grid. It will be market driven, he said. Matt Gladick, Vice President of Economic Development for the Greater Durham Chamber of Commerce, said a number of companies he works with have asked for just these kinds of data centers. Relias blames AI for not meeting job targets. In 2016, Relias, an online training company serving the healthcare industry, said it would more than double its Triangle presence. The company had committed to adding 450 jobs through a $4.5 million investment. Fast forward to 2026, and the state of North Carolina has now terminated that incentives agreement after the company fell short of its job targets amid the boom in artificial intelligence. The Economic Investment Committee, part of the North Carolina Department of Commerce, voted February 24th to end the deal. Relias informed state officials last year that it had fallen short of its hiring target linked to the incentives, according to NC Commerce documents disclosed February 24. The company had hired just over 330 people in the Triangle instead of the 450 promised. Relias will keep nearly $1.4 million in incentives it had already earned by meeting earlier milestones. In a letter to Commerce officials signed by Nicole Mattson, Vice President of Human Resources for Relias, the company detailed how it has doubled down on AI to drive efficiencies. We identified skill gaps and redundancies in technical positions and identified areas where artificial intelligence could optimize our work product, Mattson wrote. Mystery manufacturer revealed. A stealthy manufacturing firm that for months has been eyeing eastern North Carolina for hundreds of jobs has finally unveiled its plan. U.S. Forged Rings, a manufacturer of specialty steel products, has tapped Hertford County on the Virginia border for a major production facility, according to an announcement from Governor Josh Stein recently. The three-phase project is expected to bring an investment of $875 million. The first two phases alone are expected to create 625 full-time jobs, paying more than $80,000 per year on average. North Carolina has been aggressive in its pursuit of the project. A spending bill that went before lawmakers last year described a $974 million investment eyeing Hertford County. Lawmakers approved a $51 million allocation for dock and road construction to support the investment. U.S. Forged Rings is part of the Soce family's group of industrial companies. And finally, NASDAQ startup with Duke Roots snags new CEO. 374 Water, a Morrisville-based clean tech company that started as a waste management project in a Duke University laboratory, has promoted Danny Bogar to president and CEO as it works to secure major customers. Securities filings show that on top of his $225,000 base salary, Bogar is entitled to a $50,000 signing bonus. Bogar was previously president and CEO of Power Verde Incorporated, which merged with 374 Water in 2021. Since the merger, he has overseen corporate development, working to drive the firm's global commercialization strategy. He replaces interim CEO Stephen Jones, who said in a statement that the opportunity ahead requires decisive leadership and deep institutional knowledge, which Bogar brings. And now we turn to Kaylee Thompson's page on real estate and development. Lennar buys 258 acres in Viridia. Home builder pays $86 million for land that will become houses, townhomes. Another portion of the $3 billion Viridia development in Apex is moving forward after an enormous land deal. Home builder Lennar paid $86.35 million for 258 acres in the development, flanked by Highways 1 and 540, according to Wake County deed records. Lennar has also committed to investing $4 million in infrastructure for the site, according to Joe Graziosi, Sr., Executive Vice President of Development for RXR, which is leading the Viridia project. The deal equals $337,300 per acre. Viridia has gained serious momentum since it was announced last year that North Carolina's first freestanding children's hospital would be part of the project. The 258 acres are for Lennar's residential community on the eastern portion of Viridia. The homes will be in the East Village along with RXR's multifamily buildings and retail offerings. The land is assessed at $16 million. Lennar is permitted for 1,077 homes. Its plan is to build 327 single-family homes and 750 townhomes. With permitting complete and the land deal closed, Lennar will start site work in March. The first homes will be complete in mid-2028, with the entire community complete in 2032, around the same time the hospital is expected to open. The land deal for the Children's Hospital, a partnership between UNC Health and Duke Health, is expected to close in March, meaning site work could start as soon as summer 2027. The Lennar homes will range from 1,400 to 3,500 square feet and have between 2 and 5 bedrooms. Graziosi said RXR has built sewer lines in Viridia. Lennar will continue the sewer infrastructure from the southern end of its property north to Highway 1, where it will tie in to sewer line extensions that the town of Apex is building. Southwest Raleigh joins Rush to add luxury homes. The multi-million dollar home trend is gaining steam in Southwest Raleigh. A new community from father-son duo Henry and William McNair, developers of Grand Highland Estates in Bella Vista, calls for 11 estate lots off Dover Farm Road south of Tryon Road. The gated community called Wellington Reserve will sit across from the McNair's Country Acres Equestrian Facility. Pre-sales have opened with prices starting at $3.5 million. The Coley Group is handling sales for the community, which will feature 3 custom home builders. The area north of Interstate 540 has been a haven for luxury custom homes for years, but although multi-million dollar homes aren't unheard of in South Raleigh, the new community certainly stands out and shows the growing demand for high-end living in a city that's driving up prices. "It's really unique because it's so well located," Henry McNair said about the project. "It's 5 minutes from Interstate 40, and downtown Cary is 10 minutes, and downtown Raleigh is 15 minutes. The lots are not under the city of Raleigh's jurisdiction. We are Wake County zoning, so where can you find something like this with Wake County taxes and not city taxes?" McNair said. Briar Creek Rental Homes sold for $13 million. A real estate investment trust paid more than $13 million for a collection of rental homes in Briar Creek. Vinebrook Homes Trust, an acquisition arm of Dallas-based NexPoint, acquired the My Door at Briar Creek Community for $13.7 million per Wake County deed records. The 39 townhomes located behind a Walmart supercenter sold for $351,000 per unit. The seller, Blue Heel Development, built the two-story townhomes as part of its My Door communities. The three-bedroom homes rent for around $2,400 a month before mandatory fees. Vinebrook's third-quarter presentation states that the company is focusing on acquiring new homes that are primarily build-to-rent communities with higher value profiles, lower cost to maintain, and stronger net rental yields. Most of the Briar Creek units have tenants, according to Evergreen, the rental website listing the homes. And finally, Education Lottery to move Raleigh headquarters. The North Carolina Education Lottery is moving its headquarters to a larger space in Raleigh. The organization will move from its space on Capitol Boulevard to an office building near the Six Forks Station Shopping Center. Building permits filed with the city show the lottery will occupy 4.5 floors, totaling 122,331 square feet in the Colonnade Center 2 building. This is a 22% increase from the lottery's 100,080 square feet at 2728 Capitol Boulevard, where it's been since 2015. The new headquarters at 8510 Colonnade Center Drive is a five-story Class A office building off Six Forks Road, just south of Strickland Road. The lottery will occupy more than 90% of the space. And now we turn to Ben Tobin's page, Greater Triangle. Logistics firm picks spot for project. Prologis proposes 275,000 square feet of new space in busy I-40 corridor. A real estate giant is proposing over 275,000 square feet of new industrial space in a booming corridor in one of North Carolina's hottest counties. San Francisco-based Prologis, which is P-R-O-L-O-G-I-S, which deals in logistics space, has submitted a conditional zoning request in Johnston County to rezone 28 acres along Highway 42 by Interstate 40 in the western part of the county from Agricultural Residential, or AR, and Industrial Highway Interchange, IHI, to Industrial 2 Conditional Zoning. Prologis wants to build two industrial buildings, one 173,680 square feet and the other 103,200 square feet off Cleveland and Pierce Roads. The site plan also calls for 232 parking spaces and four access points onto Pierce Road. The area in the unincorporated Cleveland community has been exploding with growth given its close proximity to Wake County and Raleigh via I-40. The site for the industrial project is next to a new Wawa convenience store on Highway 42. Prologis representatives did not respond to requests seeking comment about the proposal. According to the company's website, it has $72 billion worth of logistics real estate assets under management, representing 684 million square feet across 3,319 facilities. One of those is the Alexander Commerce Park in Durham, which the company bought for $80.2 million in September 2024. Industrial space remains in high demand across the triangle, with vacancy rates staying in the single digits amid a surge in new construction. The Johnston County Planning Board recommended approval for the Prologis application during a meeting in January, but it didn't come without opposition. Several residents who live near the site expressed concerns regarding traffic and noise. Johnston County, with a population approaching 250,000, has become a hot spot for industrial developments. In Pitt County, Greenville annexes land for 192 housing units. A growing eastern North Carolina city has given a proposed mixed-use project a big step forward. The Greenville City Council voted unanimously during a meeting Monday to annex more than 145 acres along West 5th Street to clear the way for a project expected to include 192 housing units and medical space, according to Chris Kelly, a city planner for Greenville. The owner of the property is 43 Apartments LLC, which lists the same address as Eminent Capital, a New Jersey-based real estate investment and management firm, according to filings with the North Carolina Secretary of State's office. office. David Roberts, CEO of Eminent Capital, told Triangle Business Journal the project will include apartments, townhomes, and two commercial outparcels for a gas station or a restaurant. "This is going to be a great project, extremely well located near the hospital," Robert said. The 974-bed ECU Health Medical Center is down the road on Highway 43. The company purchased the vacant land, currently zoned for lower density residential, in May 2023 for $3.15 million, according to Pitt County deed records. During the February 23 meeting, some members of City Council voiced concerns over increased traffic resulting from the development before ultimately voting to annex the land. In Sanford, Michigan firm nabs first NC site for $5 million. A Michigan-based real estate firm paid millions for a 76-year-old industrial site in a growing city on the outskirts of the Triangle, the company's first acquisition in North Carolina. Shostak Brothers, that's spelled S-C-H-O-S-T-A-K, through an LLC, purchased the 91,366-square-foot building at 2613 Lee Avenue in Sanford for a little more than $5 million this month, according to Lee County deed records. The Overton Group, based out of Greenville, helped facilitate the transaction. Charlie Rice, a senior acquisitions associate with Shostak Brothers, told Triangle Business Journal this is the company's first property in North Carolina. "We are value-add industrial investors and have been looking to buy properties in the southeast," Rice said. Rice said the building, built in 1950, has around 60,000 square feet available for leasing. And finally, in Granville County, mobile home park fetches price of $9.1 million. A Charlotte-based real estate firm specializing in affordable housing in the southeast has purchased a mobile home community up Interstate 85 north of Durham for millions of dollars. SRP Cedar Creek Creedmoor, an LLC that lists the address of Six Rock Properties on deed records, purchased the Cedar Creek Park mobile home community off Gate 1 Road in Granville County for $9.1 million in early February, according to deed records. The mobile home community sits on 63 acres south of Butner and has a Creedmoor residence, a Creedmoor address. Chris Ebert, the owner and founder of Six Rock Properties, told Triangle Business Journal that his company continues to look for opportunities in markets that have a declining supply of affordable housing options. And now we turn to Zach Ezone's page on healthcare and life sciences. Ikvia to acquire assets in Europe. Durham company strikes deal with Charles River Labs for a business line. Ikvia is moving deeper into early stage drug discovery with a deal to acquire European assets. The Durham company agreed to pay $145 million in cash to acquire part of Charles River Laboratories' discovery services business, including five sites across Europe. The deal, expected to close in the second quarter, also includes potential payments to Charles River totaling up to $10 million, the company's announced. The sites, located in Finland, Germany, the Netherlands, and the United Kingdom, provide a range of in vitro drug discovery services, Ikvia said. They focus on lab-used drug discovery, including methods that offer alternatives to animal testing and an AI platform for small molecule research. The assets have helped advance more than 100 molecules into clinical trials, including several that have earned commercial approval. The deal complements the existing drug discovery capabilities of the company's laboratory services division, Ikvia Laboratories. This acquisition will meaningfully strengthen our ability to support clients earlier in the R&D life cycle and complements our existing translational and clinical development capabilities, said David Morris, president of Ikvia Laboratories. Ikvia is the largest life sciences company based in the Triangle, generating $16.31 billion in revenue last year. The company has about 93,000 employees across the globe. Charles River, based in Massachusetts, said it will retain other drug discovery capabilities that make up about 40% of its discovery services revenue last year. The transaction is part of a broader effort to divest assets following a strategic review. Charles River last year began closing sites and laying off employees in Durham and Research Triangle Park as part of a broader restructuring. Biotech launches migraine treatment. A new biotechnology company in Raleigh is working to develop a next-generation migraine therapy. Slate Medicines launched February 24 with a $130 million Series A round co-led by life sciences investors RA Capital Management, Forbion, and Foresight Capital. With an additional undisclosed investor participating, the company is developing a monoclonal antibody licensed from China-based Darts Biopharmaceuticals. The company's lead program, SLTE-1009, focuses on a protein known as PACAP, that's all in capital letters, an emerging target for the treatment and prevention of migraines and other headache disorders. The target offers potential benefits for patients underserved by existing preventative therapies, the company said in its announcement February 24. Slate plans to initiate phase 1 clinical trials this year. The company did not disclose details of its pipeline beyond its lead program. We believe that SLTE-1009 not only offers patients a novel mechanism for migraine prevention, but also improved access through convenient at-home subcutaneous dosing, Slate CEO Gregory Oakes said. Oakes has held executive roles at major biotech companies such as Novartis and Amgen. He previously served as a venture partner at RA Capital's Raven Incubator. NC kills incentives after firms fall short. North Carolina has terminated incentives tied to two biotech manufacturing projects that promised to create hundreds of jobs in the Triangle. The state's Economic Investment Committee on February 24 terminated Job Development Investment Grants, or JDIG, awarded in 2021 to Advanced Medicine Partners and CarsGen Therapeutics. Neither company met their hiring targets under the grant awards, and both failed to file required 2024 annual reports, according to documents from the NC Department of Commerce. No payments were made under the incentives agreements. Advanced was created in 2024 using assets from Illinois-based Jaguar Gene Therapy. The grant supported Jaguar's plans to open a 174,000-square-foot gene therapy manufacturing facility in Durham. Jaguar planned to invest $125 million in the site and create about 200 jobs. State officials awarded Jaguar an incentives package of up to $2.35 million. But the plans never materialized. Advanced appears to have shut down. In May 2021, CarsGen announced plans to invest about $157 million in a 200-job manufacturing facility in Durham to support its cell therapy products. The company was eligible for $2 million in state incentives plus another $1.26 million in local incentives. It began operating its Durham facility in 2022, but operations were paused after a 2023 inspection by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration reported violations at the facility. And also on this page, the final thing we have is a big number, $1.17 billion. That's the total NIH funding haul of North Carolina entities in fiscal year 2025, down from $1.98 billion in fiscal year 2024. And now we turn to our last reporter page, written by Kate Tracy on retail and restaurants. Dorton Arena may get revitalization. Raleigh investor looks at ways to spark new interest in 1952 building. Jimi Hendrix, Led Zeppelin, and Prince played there. Professional wrestlers brawled there. The cows roamed there. Now, Jeff Ammons with Ammons Building Corporation is investing in one of Raleigh's signature buildings, the J.S. Dorton Arena at the NC State Fairgrounds. The building was finished in 1952 and has been celebrated as a modernist marvel. It was the first permanent use of a cable-supported roof system in the world. Last summer, Ammons toured the arena with his daughter, Mackenzie, who's worked at the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville, Tennessee, for the past decade. Her experience helped open Ammons' eyes to what Dorton Arena would need. He started meeting with Fairgrounds director G. Kent Yelverton. They struck an agreement. If Ammons could execute on the arena improvements, then he could step into co-management of the facility. That was before the project was passed over for local hospitality tax funds. He was seeking $5.5 million for Dorton Arena. He's planning to spend less than the $11.5 million he had originally budgeted and is pursuing other grant alternatives. The arena, which still hosts regular events, does not require a massive renovation, according to Amons. Sporting events will also be a priority. Amons is also considering temporary ice sheets for tournaments or public skating. Amons has already heard from the Major Arena Soccer League about potentially using Dorton for their games. They would love to have a team in Raleigh, and this would be the perfect size for them, Amons said. Amons has hired principal Ted Van Dyke and his firm New City Design on the project. You want to keep all the essence of what it already is and what it always has been, but somehow subtly make these updates and enhance it, Van Dyke said. Raleigh's Longleaf Swine expanding. The Smokers will soon fire up at not one but two new locations for a Raleigh barbecue restaurant. Fresh off announcing its expansion to the former Sawmill Tap Room in Raleigh, Longleaf Swine has now signed a lease for the 2,878 square foot space at 307 East Main Street in Carrboro, across from the Cat's Cradle music venue. The space has been a Luna Rotisserie and Tap Room. We weren't expecting to try to do two in a year, but here we are, and I wouldn't be able to do this without our amazing staff and employees and managers, owner Adam Cunningham said. Since the upfit will be minimal, he plans to open in Carrboro in the early fall, prior to opening Longleaf's second Raleigh location later in 2026. Cunningham liked the Carrboro space for its large patio and indoor-outdoor dining. Out of all the locations we saw in the Chapel Hill-Carrboro area, we thought that was the best one, Cunningham said. Longleaf has hired Moore Architecture and interior designer Dusty Slemp for the Carrboro restaurant, which Cunningham described as having a dive bar feel. I remember going there late at night after shows and stuff like that, and we want to bring that back to Carrboro with Cat's Cradle doing so well and going to be great neighbors, Cunningham said. And in Chapel Hill, University Place lands Barnes & Noble store. Barnes & Noble, once again writing a story of expansion in the Triangle, the nation's largest retail bookseller has leased a 19,734-square-foot space at University Place in Chapel Hill with plans to open in fourth quarter 2026. The space was formerly a Planet Fitness location next to Avita. The University Place lease comes on the heels of Barnes & Noble's expanding to a well-performing shopping center in Knightdale. The company, with seven Triangle locations today, opened a store in Raleigh's Village District in 2021. And we'll go ahead and stop there, and would like to point out that today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties, with its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina. Highwoods, our real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.